Back again with Hour 3 of Dace in the Afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to News Radio 1040 WHO. You are listening to the radio tradition unlike any other, and we want to welcome back again on Monday night our good friend, our political director, Craig Robinson from the iowarepublican.com. He joins us each and every week here on Dace in the Afternoon. And Craig, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Steve.
Craig, there is a lot to get to. I suppose in the quick opening segment we have here to start the hour, the news that was the big news that turned out to not be news and not happening at all. But I mean, this generated attention on network television, on national political blogs, on the cable news networks. And that was this idea that was out there that the Iowa Family Policy Center had secured Sarah Palin as its speaker at its fall banquet at the end of the month for a fee of $100,000. Now, they say that's not the fee that they negotiated. The event is now not going to happen, although she, through her people, has said that she'd like to come here and do an event for them in the future. So give us sort of the give and take on this story. There was a weird national story where they're quoting all of these other people in Iowa saying, we would never, ever, ever pay a speaker for an event, but almost everybody on that list has either received money from a candidate or worked for a candidate for money. So what was your view of this entire story?
I guess my view is a little bit different, Steve. As someone who has worked on a number of high-profile political fundraising events, I thought first let's get this out of the way. It would have been a tremendous opportunity not only for Sarah Palin to come into Iowa and sell a ton of books, but a great opportunity for Iowa Family Policy Center to gain a lot of attention nationally and across the state about the efforts that they're doing to get a marriage amendment passed. And so, you know, I thought the marriage of the two were ideal. Now, I think people need to realize how hard it is to control a story like this when you're trying to work to get these things done. It is hard to say, you know, I tell people, you can never control the news media. You can only hope to contain it. Mm-hmm. You can mold it. You can shape it. But when you're working with people and everyone you talk to, the chances that you're not going to be able to control the story once certain people know, it just happens every time. And so I think what happened with this story, Steve, is that, you know, the cat got a little bit out of the bag, and then you kind of have to do what you can with it to spin why you want her to come in, why it's a good reason to come. And, you know, I think it's unfortunate that she's not here, but I think what was really a disservice was the fact that you had like the Politico and all these other national political sites just hammering the fact, speaking that she was requesting a $100,000 fee to attend when it wasn't true. And the thing is that's why, you know, I know I have a bias on my site. I kind of stated up front. I'm center right. I'm a Republican. It's a Republican view. But there was nothing but pure hatred of Sarah Palin in that political article that appeared. And I mean, you know I've written things that are speculative where you think things are going to happen. You're talking about what might happen. But this was an all-out attack, I think, on her wanting a fee. And additionally, If I was, you know, Sarah Palin's a little bit different. I communicated with some other national writers on this, and I said, you know, she's a little bit different. I mean, she's more of a celebrity than she is a politician looking to come in and do that. And so this would be like one of the first big public things that she has done since leaving the governor's office as a fundraiser. Yeah, I think I would look at paying some sort of fee. I wouldn't pay $100,000 for her to come in, but I'd look at paying some sort of fee because you know what? If she comes, I'm going to raise a lot of money.
Now, real quick, there is a big event coming up this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Ronald Reagan dinner for the Republican Party of Iowa. Tim Pawlenty, outgoing Minnesota governor. Not necessarily Mr. Charisma, by the way. He's going to be the keynote speaker. It is interesting. Many people have noted that at various other events, whether it was Mike Pence, whether it was Michael Reagan, whether it was Haley Barbour, the gubernatorial candidates not invited to speak. And all of a sudden, Terry Branstad gets in the race, and now everyone's allowed to speak. I'm sure that's just a pure coincidence.
You know, I took a little grief from some of the party folks for mentioning the fact that, you know, before the Barbour event, I said, here you have the incoming RGA chairman.
Republican Governors Association.
Republican Governors Association chairman. We need to put our best foot forward to show off our gubernatorial candidates because, folks, it will cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to defeat Chet Culver next year. And what you will see is the RGA pours lots of money into competitive races. And so it's in our best interest to start making the case. You know, it's just like if you're looking for financial assistance, you start building the case of why a bank or a business partner or someone should invest in you. That's what I thought we should have done when Barber came, and we didn't. And so now all of a sudden, we have a gentleman who's running for president basically coming, and now it's time to start. I don't think we could start soon enough. In terms of letting our creating stages for our gubernatorial candidates to go out and start communicating. If you want them to beat Chet Culver on a debate setting, you better get them in front of huge crowds with high stakes speeches and let them go at it, because that'll make them a better candidate in the future.
Craig Robinson here from the iowarepublican.com. He takes us inside politics on Days in the Afternoon each week. We'll talk more with Craig in a moment. And we're back again as Craig Robinson joins us each week here on Days in the Afternoon on News Radio 1040 WHO. Craig takes us inside politics. And if you want to go inside politics the rest of the week, you can check out Craig's website, www.theiowarepublican.com, www.theiowarepublican.com. Well, Craig, really the big political news in Iowa originally broke last week on the blogosphere, and I wrote about it today on my own site. And that is the two meetings that Terry Branstad, who is in the race, running for a fifth term, even though I got something from iowapolitics.com today saying he was at a fundraiser in Wilton and still would not acknowledge that he's a candidate for governor. So I'm not sure.
It was alluded to.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the holdup is. I don't know what the delay is, but that's a whole other Oprah show, I guess.
I would say it's probably the media not just calling him a candidate. I mean, okay. For me, if we were going to take that stance, there would only be one announced candidate.
Sure.
So I just call them all candidates. They're all running, and they all act like that. So they're running for governor.
So there were two meetings held last week, Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, October the 28th, 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 29th. These were meetings, I guess, as I said on Friday, I suppose that if these were those old Saturday morning sci-fi serials at the, you know, for a quarter at the theater back in like the 1950s, it would be Bronstad meets the Christians. That's essentially what this was designed to do, and designed to be. Here's the guest list. I could confirm that on Wednesday, the following people attended the event. Jeff Boink, former executive director for RPI, and he's the current Branstad campaign director. Tom Coates, anti-gambling activist. He's a declared Branstad supporter. Pastor Bob Deaver of Grace West Church in West Des Moines. Pastor Mike Damastis of Fort Des Moines Church of Christ. Brian English, spokesperson for the Iowa Family Policy Center. Chuck Hurley, president of the Iowa Family Policy Center. Kim Lehman, Republican National Committee woman, head of Iowa Right to Life. Jonathan Narcisse, publisher and former Des Moines School Board member. Steve Scheffler, Republican National Committeeman and head of the Iowa Christian Alliance. Tom Steen, chief operating officer of the Iowa Family Policy Center. A blogger named Shane Vanderhart and Pastor Phil Winfield of Grace Church in Des Moines. There was a meeting Thursday. Boink and Coates were there too, as well as Deaver also attending. From here on WHO, Van Harden and Jan Michelson were there. Chuck Hurley was there as well. Norm Pavlevsky, lobbyist for the Iowa Christian Alliance, was there. And Tamara Scott, from Concerned Women for America. Before we get into what I've heard transpired at this meeting, I'm sure you've talked to people that have been there as well. The paradigm here, very old school. This idea that I have a sit down with these leaders and they give me validation, I patronize them or give them time or take notes and look at my assistant a few times and say, hey, get me more information on that, right? And then they go out and, I mean, this predates email. They go out and faxes to their list and say, this is the guy to vote for. He's our champion. This is almost a very 1980s paradigm. What's ironic here, however, is that many of these Christian leaders have as much problems with the skepticism of the people they're trying to lead as the politicians do. And we saw this play out in the Iowa caucuses where they all lined up behind one candidate and he got throttled despite the fact he had all of their endorsements and a lot of his own money. So I thought the paradigm itself was sort of curious. What did you think?
Couldn't agree more, Steve. I think that, when you look, it kind of reminds me in reading these accounts of these two meetings, kind of reminds me when Fred Thompson came in during the state fair in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
It was his first thing, and so they invited these, you know, come see Fred. I think we're at the Marriott downtown, and I was in a larger group, but he also met with a group of social conservatives beforehand. And as I watched this, the one thing that I don't think the political candidates realize is this actually elevates the stakes in these meetings, where now you really have to deliver. When you're summoned to a meeting or you're in a small group setting like this and you call it or it's for your campaign, mm-hmm. I think the stakes raise. And so, you know, when I watched that in 2007, I thought, maybe it would be better just to go meet with people than to try to have these small group meetings, because I don't think you're going to get maybe your intended goal in terms of conversation, because I think these people feel like this is a real serious thing. And we all know that Iowans take politics very seriously. And so we don't necessarily want to get to know the candidate and pat him on the shoulder and say, hey, glad you're running. We're going to get down to business rather quickly. And I don't think that the Branstad campaign maybe comprehended that. And so additionally, I would agree with you in the point that while a lot of these people are well-recognized leaders in the Christian movement in the state, I think just like I don't think political endorsements really matter mm-hmm. in elections, I don't think their endorsements matter that much. I don't think that they move people that much. I think they'd be better served to go out and talk to people. Go talk to people. Go to events. Show up around the state. Make your case. Because the thing is every time you ask someone else, you know, it's just like if I told my wife, if I said, hey, sweetheart, will you go tell someone X, Y, and Z? She might go tell them something, but it's not maybe how I said it, and then there's a misunderstanding. I don't know why we communicate this way anyway. I mean, we live in a day and age, Steve, where you can communicate to the masses from you via a website, a blog, press releases, campaign visits, all that stuff. I don't know why we're going through these back channels. I thought it was very odd, and I think it created a lot more work for them to overcome than they're going to receive in benefit.
Well, it goes against the current environment where people have a distrust of the system across the board. And by the way, the labor people on the left have the same distrust of their leaders mm-hmm. trying to woo them to go for Democratic candidates that aren't for their issues, as we're seeing on the right here with Christian conservatives. This is a distrust across the board. It's not necessarily one group. People just believe the system as a whole is a system of a down, that it has failed them. And so the idea that these leaders, you know, Branstad's a politician. I think his paradigm is flawed, but I don't fault him for wanting to get some FaceTime and be able to tell people that I met with the so-and-sos, because it, you know, it does say something that he can be a candidate for 2 weeks and summon these people to his offices. But he also doesn't understand that these people do not command the sort of influence that they've had in the past. Most people just simply don't trust these advocacy organizations as much as they used to.
Agreed.
They see them as the Republican Family Policy Center, the Republican Christian Alliance, the Democratic AF, the Democratic Teamsters, right? The Democratic Feminists. That they're more unofficial arms of a political party. So what does concern me as someone who's very open and honest about his faith and knows many of the people that were at this meeting and considers them friends? What concerns me is that it is almost as likely, if not more so, that they will lose credibility with their own people. As it is, they will convince their people to support any said candidate. Because what the people want, they want those leaders to go back to them, hear their concerns, find out what it is they're looking for and what they want, and then go find a candidate accordingly. Not meeting with people who have been in the race for all of 2 weeks when they haven't been in politics for 15 years. And then they all sit there and decide in some smoke-filled room at the same building that Mitt Romney and Doug Gross used to call home in their campaign offices. And then they come back and like, you know, shepherds herd all these lambs into slaughter into the weaning pen. That paradigm is going to make the people doing it look bad, even worse than the candidate, I think.
I agree with that. I think that there is no need to operate in that fashion anymore. And
the only reason to do it is if you think you're somehow negotiating yourself a seat at the table.
Yes, and I think
which is a stupid, flawed strategy that people have pronounced judgment on as well.
You know, I think on one hand you can make the case that, you know, this was Branstad reaching out. So maybe that's good, but again, I don't understand the purpose of it. And I think that I'm sure they're all scratching their heads now at the Branstad office wondering, like, well, what did we get from that? Because the other side of the story, is that, you know, it's just like you have to tell, you know, your friends, your kids, maybe whatever, be careful. Everyone's got a cell phone now and most of them have cameras. Well, guess what? Like, everyone blogs now. Everyone writes.
Every cell phone's got a camera.
Man, I mean,
everybody's a walking YouTube cameraman.
So when you go to a meeting as a candidate, it's like every meeting you go to is like an editorial board. Mm-hmm. We're going to record it. We're going to have the audio, maybe video, maybe cameras. And so everything you say, we can pick apart. And I mean, that is just the world in which we live in now.
So some specifics from these meetings have begun to come out. When we come back, let's take a look at those.
Sure.
And get your comment on those things. So, because it also ties into what's taking place in New York tomorrow with this special election. And we're seeing more and more evidence. I had somebody here in our own building who's been very skeptical of the way I've done my radio show for the last few years. And this person came up to me last week when this whole thing went down with Newt Gingrich that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes, and this liberal woman, and this person was like, wow. This person was like, holy cow. All this time I thought maybe you were just crazy, but maybe you were just ahead of the curve. I said, no, I was crazy. But I was also ahead of the curve.
You need to get that Denny Green clip. You are who we thought they were.
That's exactly right. We'll come back. More with Craig Robinson in a moment. Back with more Inside Politics here on Dace in the Afternoon. Craig Robinson here with us. Visit Craig's website, theiowarepublican.com. And Craig and I are talking about last week's meetings between former and wannabe governor, again, Terry Branstad, and some leading Christian activists across the state and what it means. And two individuals that attended the meetings, Mike Damastis, a local pastor who was on this show Friday, and a blogger named Shane Vanderhart, who I do not know, but I've read his blog a couple of times. They have written pretty extensive thoughts on the meeting that took place, and I would not say either one of them gave a rather flattering endorsement. I thought Vanderhart tried to do the best he could to whatever remotely looked good to help him with. But even he wrote in his blog, if this was intended to help him with these people, I don't see how that happened. Mike Damastis was a lot more blunt than that, but sort of came to some of the similar conclusions. Let me share with you, Craig, some of the people, I've talked to numerous little birdies who are intimately aware of what went on in these meetings. And I wrote about this on my blog today. This exchange, for instance, they're in a backdoor meeting. Branstad comes in on Wednesday morning, says he's got to leave an hour early. He's got an important conference call. Yet despite the fact he has an important conference call, after the Wednesday morning meeting convenes an hour early, he calls Chuck Hurley and Tom Coates and Jonathan Narcisse back into his private office for an impromptu private meeting. During this exchange, Narcisse asks him what is his plan to reform state government. And Branstad says, well, you know, I don't have one right now, but I've got till next November to come up with one. To which Jonathan reminded him, really? Because I thought you had an election in June, right? And I think that attitude, if you allow this attitude to become pervasive that you're doing people a favor, that is not good. No campaign that makes it about the candidate and not about the voter is successful. So how that gets defined, I think, is really important. So here are some comments that I was told. One little birdie said that he thought Branstad came across as, quote, arrogant. Another one told me that he was, quote, no threat to the liberal status quo at all, also said that when the conversation turned to confronting illegal immigration head on, his quote, eyes seemed to glaze over, unquote, that he just seemed totally disinterested. One person told me he, quote, repeatedly displayed personal moral convictions along with an unwillingness to take a public stand on any of them, unquote. One person said, quote, his politics may be conservative on some level, but he's definitely a moderate by temperament. If the liberals claimed he was a right winger, he'd probably be offended at that, unquote. He told some anecdote when the talk turned to confronting judges. He said that, well, you know, he tried to confront an arbitrator over teacher salaries when he was governor, and he got sued and he lost, and he's not going to risk impeachment over the marriage issue and the judges, and that the only thing there is to do is pass an amendment, which we just had this conversation 3 weeks ago. David Barton from Wall Builders came to town at the Iowa Christian Alliance banquet and said that's absolutely not true. One little birdie told me after that conversation, listen to this quote, quote, I felt like I was talking to Doug Gross when I was talking to Terry about marriage and the judges, unquote. I thought that was a devastating quote. When asked about gambling, he said, well, I tried to veto it twice. I was getting booed at Hawkeye football games. 70% of the voters wanted it. So what was I supposed to do? That may sound well, maybe in a room of some of in what you used to do for a living. But in that realpolitik isn't going to work in a room with a bunch of pastors. And in fact, one of them then challenged him and said, well, then, Governor, what else are you willing to give in on if the public wants it? It just did not seem like this accomplished what he was hoping to accomplish. So your overall thoughts, you've talked to people who were there and people who talked to people who were there. What do you think?
I guess my overall thought is that when you come out and you say that I'm a candidate again, that I'm running for governor, even if there's been no formal announcement, that you have to take stands on issues. You can't be vague. You can't be you have to come out and say, these are the problems that are addressing our state, and here's how I plan to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Having a conversation about your temperament that you want to have as governor or any of those things will not help you get any votes. And so I think the biggest failure of the meeting is that he didn't come out with clear proposals or where he's at. I mean, it sounded like he was kind of the dartboard, and everyone threw – you know, a bunch of darts in him, and he just absorbed all the blows. And so I just don't think that's what Iowans are looking for. I mean, I think people are upset. People are really worked up about the direction our state is going, the direction our country is going. And so they look at and there's a whole – I mean, we're talking – there's a buffet of issues, man. I mean, it is huge. Pick some. Tell us where you're going on the offensive. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and I just think that when you sit down in a room – with pastors and people from IFPC. I mean, Steve, I've talked to political candidates who are coming onto your show, and you know what? I mean, I've said, you know, here's what he's going to talk about. I mean, you don't hide, right? Mm-hmm. The people that were in these meetings, they don't hide. We know what they care about. We know, and it's not that you have to go out there and tell them what they want to hear, but you got to answer their questions. And if you're not willing to do that, you're in a whole bunch of trouble.
Here's a direct quote from an email my own pastor who attended both of the meetings. He, Chuck Hurley, Tom Coates, and Jeff Boink, I believe, were the only people that attended both meetings. We spent about 3.5 hours with Terry Branstad last week. He says, quote, I don't doubt his personal convictions. I don't doubt his passion and drive. I don't question his political abilities. What I do doubt is his ability to reform from being a typical politician with the status quo of building teams of people that don't hold these values and compromising on the very principles of our foundation. We need leadership that is willing to take a bold stand and hold firm on all issues we are facing today. All these destructive behaviors, which are against God's principles for America, is what's killing us as a nation. What I heard in the meetings were personal convictions against these killers of our nation, but what I also heard was we can't take a stand so strong that we turn others off. This is the kind of thinking that caused compromises in the past during his 4 terms as governor. This simply is not the leadership we need. To turn a boat around, you need to steer it differently. Unquote.
I think he makes a lot of good points, Steve, and I think that one of the issues I think Branstad might have as a candidate is how can he – you're not the governor. You're not the incumbent because when you already hold the office, you can act like this. You can operate like this.
Mm-hmm.
You can be as centrist as you want to be in terms of how you want to navigate these political waters. But when you are trying to knock off an incumbent, you need to offer – clear, stark differences between you and your opponent. And that doesn't matter if your opponent is Chris Rantz, Bob Vanderplatz, you know, Rod Roberts, Christian Fong, or Chuck Colver.
So explain to me then, if you're not going to do that, why have these meetings? The only other thing I could think of is you still think it's the 1980s. You summon these people to your office, give them some coffee, juice, and a donut. They send a fax out to their people, and they vote for you no matter what. That paradigm's a quarter of a century old, which, by the way, is about the last time he ran a campaign.
Well, and look, I think it's good that he wants to meet these people, but I think that the venue and how they did it was maybe the wrong way. I mm-hmm. mean, I think he would have been better served just showing up at a county central committee meeting somewhere and just saying, well, hey, let's sit down and let's have a talk.
It's funny you bring that up, because here's what's also gone down in the last week. Woodbury County, which, as you know, is a Republican, that's God's country. Miss skipping out on the Woodbury County forum is like a Democrat in a primary skipping out on the Polk County forum. You don't do that. He didn't go to the Woodbury County forum. I was told by one of the people there that the Woodbury County chairman was not shy about lighting him up for it afterwards. And one little birdie said he, quote, ripped Branstad, and not just for not showing up. He also wanted to ask him why he raised the sales taxes, appointed the gay marriage judges, etc. There was a Warren County event recently. I think this was actually on Saturday. The Warren County chairman said that we didn't need to, quote, dust off, unquote, Terry Branstad as a candidate, and that drew some applause. Not showing up to these events, I understand Warren County Republican Party is going to be a little different than Polk, Johnson, and Lynn, but I also understand who's more likely to vote in droves in the Republican primary. And I this is a strategy I don't understand. I think, Craig, tell me if I'm wrong, but the way to play this politically is not to put Governor Branstad on your bumper stickers, not to make it look like he's doing you a favor by letting you meet him, not to make it look like he'll come to your county event when he has time and gets around to it, not making it look like we were just all sitting here with our thumbs up our sphincter holes and just couldn't figure out how to walk and chew gum until Terry left, you know, $500,000 a year job at DMU to, you know, to teach us our ABCs and P's and Q's again. I don't think that's the way you want to run this campaign if you're him.
Well, and the weird thing, Steve, is he might be the best retail politics candidate out there. And so why they would want him to operate in this fashion is beyond me. He was the strongest at his press conference when he was asked difficult questions by the media. So, I don't think there's anything that they really need to be afraid of in terms of as being a candidate and as being prepared. I just think the longer that he doesn't go out there and start going to these county meetings and those things, the worse off he's going to be. Speaking of the two chairmen, I mean, this is a difficult position, I think, because as a party person and as someone who's worked at the party, you know, your county chairs have to, like, I mean, they sign up for the job, right? They're Republicans. They need to be encouraging of all candidates. So I get a little nervous when they start maybe taking public swipes. And hey, if you feel that way, that's fine. Maybe you're not cut out to be maybe the chairman of that group, which is to build a broad base of Republican support for whoever our nominee is. So I get a little nervous when I hear some of those things. But those things are going to happen more and more if he's not out there selling himself to these people and knowing him. He is, in terms of retail politics, Steve, he might be one of the best politicians in the state at that. And so not letting – I mean, I think he thrives when he's out with people. I think that when he's in a private small group meeting that's exclusive and stuff, I don't see the benefit for him to go to it.
Well, it's interesting, this disconnect between – he's an establishment guy. And this disconnect that exists still within the Republican Party across the country between the so-called establishment and the so-called grassroots. And to me, I think his whole candidacy is always going to come down. How is it defined? Is it defined that he left a lucrative job at a time when Iowa needed a real statesman and he took a thankless job because he loves the state? Or is it going to be defined as a power play by the Polk County moderate mafia, bound and determined with a weakened Democratic candidate that the conservatives, especially the Christian ones, really don't win and get control of the party? And however this gets defined, and we have 8 months to find that out, is going to determine whether he wins or not. So far, if he doesn't want it defined to be the latter, they're not off to a very good start. Would you agree with me on that?
Agree.
So I think that plays into what the other big story is, because this is right along the same lines. And this is the story in New York where you have Doug Hoffman, the conservative candidate there, the woman whose name I cannot pronounce.
Skazafava.
Thank you, who was the Democratic, or excuse me, Freudian slip, the Republican candidate. But she's a Planned Parenthood Award winner. She's pro-sodomy, pro-Obamanomics and stimulus packages, right? I mean, she's the very definition of rhino. They don't have a primary. She gets the nomination. Hoffman runs on the conservative line. Everybody from real conservatives to neocons, like Fred Thompson, ends up endorsing Hoffman. And Newt Gingrich, who you would think would be maybe the smartest one in the group, Craig, and who had given numerous speeches in the last, two of them at CPAC in the last 2 years, saying it might be time for conservatives to break ranks and go independent from the Republican Party. How does he get caught with his knickers down in this race endorsing the liberal? How does he find that? And then then the indefensible, well, I do whatever the local party says is the right thing to do. Is it crack? Crack? Is it crystal meth, PCP? What drug and narcotic has he ingested to find himself in this position?
I do not understand what happened there. I mean, you've got people from, I mean, name a national Republican. They endorsed Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, follow the tea leaves. I mean, you've got, you know, the conservatives in New York, they're not necessarily really strong Pataki people. Pataki's supporting the Conservative Party candidate. I mean, this is really, really, it blows my mind that Newt did this. And additionally, I mean, yeah, the reason she dropped out of the race is because the RNC pulled their funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we put up, if we're just really about, if Republican is just a name brand, and sadly, I think that's sometimes where we're headed. If it's just a name brand and we don't have any quality control measures, I mean, that's where our party is drifting. And so what was that going to get us in New York 23? It was going to get us a rhino candidate. And because we can actually call her that now since she endorsed the Democrat, I mean, she was not a Republican candidate. She did not stand for the principles of our party. And the thing is I think a lot of politicians in Iowa and all across the country should take some notes of who Doug Hoffman is. He's pro-life. He's against gay marriage. And you know what? This race up there hasn't been about those two issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's just who he is. He got it out of the way. You can go to his website and read it. This is who I am. Is he having problems winning? Absolutely not. So there's nothing to be afraid of in terms of, you know, and I've worked for candidates who are this way, like, well, I just can't tell people that I'm, you know, that I'm pro-life or, you know, I don't think, two guys getting married is right. When you take really weak stands like that, you'll get beat every time.
We'll come back, wrap things up with Craig Robinson in a moment. Back one last time with Craig Robinson of the iowarepublican.com, and Craig takes us inside politics each week here on News Radio 1040 WHO. Craig, wrapping it up here, I got about a minute, and we were just discussing Newt Gingrich versus the rest of the conservative establishment this week, many of whom, if it wasn't Ronald Reagan was responsible for giving them their big break, it was probably Newt's revolution
Absolutely.
In 94. So given what has transpired here, I don't think it's much of a secret he was gearing up for a presidential run. Is this over? I mean, is this the point? Should somebody just go knock on his door and say, hey, dude, just
it's
really over. Don't do this to yourself.
It's real close. I mean, I'll never count Newt out. I mean, he's probably as skilled of a politician there is. Part of me thinks the reason that he did that is because his contract with America was run really through the RNC. It was a party thing that mm-hmm. they really helped implement. I think he, like some of our other candidates who have been away from elected office, don't appreciate how our party has changed. And I don't mean this rightward drift that the news media is talking about. I'm talking about our party is just sick of spineless politicians. We want people who have core convictions, who when they are elected, we know what they're going to do. We're not questioning, you know, how they're going to vote on major issues. And so that's what really blows me away. I think that this one endorsement, if it does, I mean, it might prevent him from running for president, but the one thing is if he does, he'll be defending this thing
all the way through.
All the way through.
Yep. Thank you, Craig. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll come back more days in the afternoon tomorrow. Until then, Isaiah 61.